And I'm going to give you a little psychology tonight. Psychologists tell us that we're born with some orientations toward life. All right? And they divide them up into four areas. And before I start, I want to tell you a little Greek legend that sort of sets the stage for this. How many of you know the legend of Pygmalion? Pygmalion, Kate, you remember what it is? Well, who was that guy's name? There was a guy in England that did that used the Pygmalion theory. That if you think a person is a certain way, you can make that person into that way. Professor Higgins. Yeah, Professor Higgins on My Fair Lady. Okay. But the Greek legend is that Pygmalion was a Cyprian king, and he spent several years trying to find a woman that would make the perfect wife for him. And he was frustrated. He couldn't find this woman. Vern, I can't understand it, but he couldn't find this perfect woman to make the perfect wife. And so what he did is he got a piece of ivory and he carved one. All right? And then the legend goes that he bowed and prayed before this ivory statue, and it came to life. And it was everything that he had hoped for, that he was trying to find, and they got married and lived happily ever after. Now, that only happens in legends and fairy tales. Although many of us try to take the hammer and chisel and chisel away at some of the sharp edges our spouses have. And really what we're trying to do, we're trying to make them more like us. Well, we say, boy, if my... and I won't use personal examples tonight because they're too personal, but, if I could make my spouse more like me, and I'm sure Debbie thinks the same thing, if she could make me more like her, we'd get along happy. And I thought about that this afternoon as I was thinking about this. Oh, that would be terrible. I mean, if she was just like me and I was just like her, that wouldn't be any fun. But so often, that's exactly what we try to do. We try to make our spouses just like us. And I'm going to talk about these four areas, and you'll see, I think, more of what I'm trying to say. First area. The psychologists say this. There's four areas of life in which people are fundamentally different, and they're born that way. He's not saying one is more right than the other. It's just they're saying they're different. All right? And you probably heard about some of these. First one they talk about is where people get their energy and how this impacts their relationship. All right? And here you have the extrovert and the introvert. All right? The extrovert, all right, they get their energy, they get their excitement from interacting with other people. Their preference is to be with other people. That interaction sort of charges their battery. I mean, when they've got to be by themselves, they get a little bit antsy. They get nervous. They don't know what to do with them by themselves. They need a lot of relationships. And so they spend a lot of time going out making new friends and keeping the friends they got. Now, as I talk about these four areas of orientation, I want you to think about, first of all, yourself and to which one you fit in. And then I want you to think about your spouse. All right? Which one they fit in. All right, so the extrovert. Now, the opposite of the extrovert is the introvert. All right, they get their energy from being by themselves. That's their preference. They prefer to be alone. The quiet hours they spend meditating or walking by themselves is what gives them their strength. And when they have to be around a lot of people for a long time, they're drained. I mean, it sort of makes them nervous. It's not to say they don't like people. They do like people. They just can't take a lot of heavy doses of being with other people. And so these kind of people are very careful. They try to balance the time they spend by themselves and the time they spend with others so that they have a lot of solitude to regain their strength so that they can interact with others. Their preference is, whereas the extrovert likes to have a lot of relationships, The introvert would like to have just a few significant ones. Okay? Now, if an extrovert and an introvert goes on a secluded vacation, all right, the introvert loves it. I mean, they could live like that forever. But after 2 or 3 days, the extrovert's going down the hall knocking on doors, you know, trying to meet people so to form some new relationships. So think a little. Now, psychologists say that we're born that way. That when we're born, just like you're born with physical traits, you're born with this orientation toward others. I mean, you're either an extrovert or an introvert. But think about it, and think about yourself. Which one of those would you say you are? And then which of those categories would you say your spouse is in? And think about how you interact with those two orientations. All right, the second area is how people take in and handle information and how they solve problems. All right, talk about, first of all, the intuitive type person. This is the kind of person that focuses on ideas and possibilities. These people are imaginative. They're constantly thinking of new ways to do things, and ideas pop into their head, fully developed, fully blown. I mean, they don't have to think about it for a long time. When they get an idea, they get the whole idea. They're what you might call the big picture types. They don't like to really get in to the details. They see a problem, they think about it, and they solve it. They say to others, "Oh, just trust me. I have a hunch about this. It'll work out. Don't worry about it." So there's the intuitive type person. And again, these guys that have studied psychology and humans and all that kind of stuff, they say you're born that way. Now, the other extreme from an intuitive type person is what they call a sensing type person. They're the people that say, you know, when the intuitive person says, "Trust me, I have a hunch about this," they're the people that say, "I'll trust you when I see all the facts. I mean, you give me the data, and I'll process that data, and then I'll solve the problem." These are the kind of people that accomplish more out of perspiration and not inspiration. They take in information through their five senses, you know, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, and touching, and then they consider all those details, and they like the details. I mean, they, you know, these are people that like the charts and the graphs and all the numbers. Now, which one's right? Neither one of them are right. I mean, we need both of them. I mean, we need people in the church that have big ideas. But we also need people that know how to take those ideas and take care of the details. Now, can you imagine? This is one of my favorite examples. I think about myself and Debbie, and I have to admit we're different in this area. I'm the big picture person. She's the detail person. But I might come home and say, and you might identify with this, I say, "Let's go on vacation." And I got it all planned out how, you know, we'll go here. Now, I don't think about packing the bags. I don't think about... I don't think about getting somebody to keep the dog. I don't think about stopping the mail. I can picture us, you know, down in Disney World on the rides having fun. But somebody's got to think about, you know, about packing a suitcase and things like that. So neither one of them are. And we need both of these types. We need both of these type people in the church. I mean, if all we had were big idea people, none of the details would get. I mean, the bills wouldn't get paid, and they'd turn off the lights. And we need both types. But stop and think about it. If you're an intuitive type person, and your spouse is a sensing type person, unless you learn to appreciate that difference in each other, and learn how to work together and mesh together, you're going to be trying to get your hammer and chisel out and chisel on him or her and make them more like you. I mean, it's just the way we are. Same thing, extrovert or introvert. If you like to be around people, what are you going to be doing? You're going to be inviting people all over all the time. I mean, you're going to be wanting to go out with people all the time. And your spouse may be dying on the vine because she's an introvert and she don't like to be around people that much. And if you don't talk about it and learn how to mesh those two beings, you're going to be going like this all the time. You're going to be saying, let's have somebody over for dinner. And they're going to be saying, no, no, no. And they're going to be saying, hey, let's go on vacation. And they say, well, we haven't washed our clothes from the last one. And so we need to understand and appreciate because we need that balance. I need Debbie to tell me we got to pack a suitcase before we go on vacation. We need that balance in our marriage. All right, the third area that they point to is this area on how a person makes decisions. They say there's two extremes in this area. There's the thinkers. All right, this is the Mr. Spock type for you, those of you who know about Star Trek. They make their decisions on logic and practicality. They take what you might call the cool, calculated approach. I mean, they look for, when there's an effect, they look for a cause. If it makes sense, they do it. I mean, everything is sort of black and white in these, it's off or on. It's clear. It's simple. And these are the kind of people that really focus on, here's what we need to do. Let's just go ahead and do it. Now, on the other side, to the thinkers, there's the feelers. The feelers. They make decisions not so much on logic, but on how is that decision going to affect this person. What are they going to think about it? They're more in tune to their emotions and their sentiments than the logic, cool, calculated person is. These are the kind of people that'll agonize when they got to confront somebody. I mean, they just don't want to do it. They'll put it off and they'll lose sleep over it at night. And what they focus on is peace, harmony, and understanding. These are the kind of people that when they see a sad movie, they cry. I mean, they feel along with the others. Now, when they run across a person that's in pain, they'll feel that pain with that person, and they'll weep with them. Now, the thinker will come up and see the person in pain, and they'll say, well, here's what you need to do to fix that. And they'll give you practical suggestions. Now, which one of those orientations is right? Neither one of them is right. Yeah, the one that you are. They're both right, and we need both of those kind of people. I mean, in the church, and when we have somebody that has a need, we need those people that'll go to that person, put their arm around them, and weep with them, and cry, and feel with them. But we also need the practical kind of person that'll go to that person and say, look, I can help you. Here's a suggestion for how you can get out of this mess you got yourself into, and give them, steps on how to do that. But unless we recognize that in our spouses, and learn how to put the two together in a way that balance out each other, again, we're just going to keep, fighting. We're going to keep fussing and knocking our heads unless we learn to appreciate that. Now, what we try to do, oftentimes we get the hammer and chisel, that I'm going to make you more into a feeler. I mean, we just have a lot better marriage if you would feel every now and then. Don't always, be cool and calculating. Have a little feeling. All right, and then the fourth basic orientation is this thing called structure. All right, on one end there's the structured person. They like everything predictable. They like, they like everything organized. Everything has a place. Everything should be in its place. They like making a plan and sticking with that plan. These are people that don't like changes, don't like surprises. Don't like getting off schedule. They're the kind of people that just settle it. I mean, just settle it. Just plan it. Let's do it. And yeah, no point to other people. Think about yourself. All right. And then, on the other hand, there's the unstructured people. They prefer spontaneity. They don't like the routine. They don't like the rules. They don't like the deadlines. They avoid planning at all costs. They prefer to just let the day unfold as it happens. They're sort of the play-it-by-ear people. We're just sort of play-it-by-ear. Psychologists say those are the four basic orientations of life. Your relationships, how you solve problems, how you make decisions, and structure. Now, think about it, and I hope you have been as we've talked about it. What category would you put yourself into in each of those areas? What category would you put your spouse in those four categories? And here's what I'd encourage you to do. And they actually have tests that they'll give you. If you can't figure out which one of these categories you're in, they actually have tests that you can take, and they'll analyze you and tell you which one you are. Really, they do. But you ought to try. I suggest to you that you sometime, when you have a, and I'm going to talk about this in a minute, but when you have a date with your spouse, yeah, date, we'll talk about that in a minute. You ought to sit down and talk about these four orientations and try to figure out which one you each are in. And if you find yourself the same, that's good. I mean, you won't be fussing. I mean, if you both are structured people, you'll make plans and you'll stick to those plans. No surprises, no changes. And you might be bored out of here. You might be more bored out, or if you're both that way, you'll plan surprises. All right, you'll plan them. but if you find yourself different in any of these orientations, then you ought to sit down and talk about how you can. First of all, you ought not to try to change the other person. You provide that balance in your marriage. And then talk about how you can work together to mesh those two orientations to make you a stronger one. Okay. Second thing. Let's talk about learning the appropriate language of love. All right? Now, just like we have different orientations in how we make decisions and how we handle our relationships, all of us also have preferences in how we give and receive love. And I'm going to talk about them in certain languages. All right? Now, it's important to understand this, because if you and your spouse don't talk the same language of love, he, in the language that he prefers, could be telling you over and over that he loves you. But if you speak a different language, it'd be like him talking Greek to you. You won't hear it, and you won't understand it. And because of that, you, even though he may be trying his, now I'm using the, you know, the man is to tell him that it worked the same way, he may be doing his level best and in a real honest attempt to tell you that he loves you. But if you don't speak that same language, you may never hear it. And you may live your whole life not knowing that that person, your spouse, really does love you. Now, I want to mention, and I just because these are the seven that I thought of, I want to mention seven languages of love, all right? Seven different ones that we use. First one is touch. There's certain people that they like to give and receive love with a touch. So, these are the ones that always like to come up and hug you, kiss you on the cheek, hold hands. They express their love, and they want to receive love by touch. All right? Second one is the verbal expression, basically saying, I love you, saying those words. I love you. All right? Third one is service. There's people that express their love. This is their language of love by what they do for you. Debbie's grandmother was a great one, I mean, for this. She expressed her love in that every time you went down there, she made you just a big meal. I mean, it doesn't make any difference whether you're hungry or not or whether you need to eat or not. That was the way she said, I love you. Could be not only cooking, but maybe, you know, taking care of a car or just some service that you do. All right? The fourth one is providing. Providing. A lot of men speak this language of love. They express their love by the fact that they, you know, go out and are the breadwinner. They go out and buy life insurance because they want to make sure that when they're gone, their family, their spouse, is provided for. So, providing. Fifth one, gift giving. Gift giving. These are folks that keep the department stores in business. When they want to say, I love you, they'll go out and buy a little gift. Doesn't have to, you know, it might not cost much, or they might be buy great big ones when they want to really say I love you. But they give gifts. That's the way they express it. Then there's those six, number six, that want to provide opportunities to their to the person that the object of their love. And so they'll think of ways to challenge and inspire you. I mean, these are the people that'll go out for their spouse and buy them a bungee jumping ticket. I mean, that's an opportunity. Or, you know, take them up in an airplane, let them jump out of an airplane. They want to provide, and they think in doing that, you know, take you on hot air, or send you on, I would send you on a hot air balloon, I wouldn't take you. But they create those kind of opportunities. And then the seventh one is giving time. They say, I love you, because they give you their time. They set their schedule so they can spend an hour or large blocks of time with the person who's the object of their love. Now, think with me, as we did in the first category. How do you prefer to express love? And then think with me, how you like to, what language do you like to receive? When somebody tells you that they love you, how do you like for them to tell you that? And then think about your spouse. Do you know how they, what's their preference for receiving love? Do you know the language? I mean, do you know their language? I mean, can you tell when your spouse is trying to tell you that they love you? And again, I'd encourage you to sit down and talk about it. Sit down and sort of put it on the table and say, how do you like me to tell you? Do you understand, you know, here's the things I'm trying to do to tell you that I love you. Do you understand? I mean, do you understand that that's how I'm trying to tell you and what I'm trying to tell you? But sit down and talk about it. You know, and let me say this. It's not hard to learn a new language. I mean, if you sit down with your spouse and your spouse says, well, I like to be loved by having you spend time with me. You might say, oh, I didn't know that. I mean, I thought when I, you know, provided for you and when I cooked breakfast for you, serving, and when I bought you a little gift, I thought that's what you wanted. And you say, no, I just like to spend an hour talking to you. That's not hard to change. I mean, if you really love them and want to accept them, you could find a way to spend time with them, if that's the language they want to talk. So I'd encourage you to sit down. And it can really, I think, have a tremendous impact on your marriage. If you can move from hoping that you're loved to knowing that you're loved because you both speak the same language, transfer your marriage. All right. Then quick, number three. Three practical steps to keep the fun and the romance in marriage. All right? I've been reading this book. This guy says, the major reason for marital problems, you know what the number one major reason for marital problems is? Nope. You're close. Boredom. People get bored with one another. I mean, you get married, you get into a routine. I mean, you go to work, and you come home, cook, huh? Yeah, how do you come home? Well, a lot of people do. Well, they're not like you, but they get in a routine. You know, they take care of their household business, they take care of their social obligations, they watch TV, and before they know it, they get in this routine and they get bored with one another. They might not fuss and fight. They might not yell at one another. They may even talk to one another now and then. But they don't enjoy each other. They don't. They're not together in the way that God intended them to be together. Now think back. Now some of you may have to go back a long ways, but others won't. But think back to when you were courting. Remember the kind of things you did when you were courting. You didn't have a routine then. I mean, you didn't every single date go to the same place and have root beer and French fries. on every single. You did, Pip? Well, that's all right. But you did different things. You had fun together. You were friends with each other. Now, let me. And I know I'm almost out of time. Let me give you three practical things that'll help you. Number one, have a weekly date. Have a weekly date. I mean, find a time at least once a week when you can go out, when you can leave the kids with somebody, and you can go out with just each other. And it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be a time when you go out and spend a lot of money. I mean, you can go down and be together at McDonald's just like you can at the top of the park. You can go down and spend 49 cents for a hamburger just like you can go down and spend $49 for a steak dinner. And it'll accomplish the same thing. But it's like we talked about when we were talking a long time ago when we talked about schedule. If you don't put it in your schedule and then make your schedule your boss, you won't do it. You just won't do it. Put a time in your schedule. Now, you say, well, if you're both morning people, go out for breakfast. If you're both nighttime people, then do something at night. If one of you is a morning person and one of you is a night person, go out for lunch. But find a time, and you ought to make it. You ought to find a time when you're during the week. Sometime, I mean, don't wait till Friday night to where you're just worn out from everything that's gone on that week. Find a time when you can be at your best. I mean, when you're awake and you're alive and you're fresh. Find a time, even if it's only for an hour a week. Find a time when you can go out and do something together. All right? Number two, work to develop some common fun interests. Some things you like that you and your spouse can do together to have some fun. Maybe roller skating. Or maybe you say, oh, no, I don't want to go roller skating. It might break something. All right? Go canoeing. I say, no, I don't want to go canoeing. I might drown. Say, all right? Go and get you a bicycle. Say, no, I don't want to get a bicycle. I might break something. All right? Then go for a walk. I mean, go for a walk in the woods, right. But find something. Just don't get, if you get arrested for TPing, don't tell them what church you go to, all right? But think of, now let me ask, and don't answer out loud, but think back to when you were courting. What did you do for fun? And then how long has it been since you did that? But find something. Yeah, you guys, I don't want to hear it from the back. But find something that you'd like to do together that you can. Now, I mean, sitting down and, you need to sit down and do the family budget. That's not fun. Sitting down paying the bills together. That's all right, but that's not fun. Find something that's fun to do and do it. And then number three, plan some overnight getaways. I mean, where you can leave the kids if you got them, and you say, well, we live by ourselves at home. Why should we go somewhere to get away? Oh, because you want to break the routine. I mean, you stay at that house all the time. You want to get somewhere new. Go, and it only has to be, I mean, you don't got to go far. I'll use the Rod and Susan if they don't mind. I mean, a couple, 3 weeks ago, they went up to Chesaning for an overnight stay. That was all Susan talked about for 2 weeks, and still am. But that's the kind of thing to do. You say, oh, my spouse would never go for that. Well, surprise. I mean, if you put down a deposit and made the reservation, you just tell them, we're going to lose all this money if you don't go. But plan it. And do it. I say, how often? Well, I don't know. How often do you need it? Maybe once a quarter. Maybe once every 2 months. Maybe you need it once a month, or maybe you need it once a week. You're gonna have to decide that. But plan some time to get away. To get away from the routine. Get away. Get away from, and just go out and have an overnight getaway and do it together. Now, what's an authentic Christian marriage? One where you see differences as a blessing. The differences in your spouse as a blessing. One where each of you, both really do feel loved. because you're talking the same language. And one where routine and boredom gives way to conversation, to fun, and romance. That's the kind, I think that's the kind of marriages that God intended for us to have. And we can have them if we work in it. The world's going to say, oh, you can't have a marriage like that anymore. Can't do it. But I, there's examples in this room tonight that prove to us that yes, you can. Yes, you can. Any questions or comments?